Welcome to another episode of Minute Till Six. I'm your host, Mark Haynes, inmate the champ, along with my co-host,
Chris Perry, Chris.PerrySR.
And today, man, we got a very special guest in the building. Man, somebody I've been a fan of since I was a kid. You know, from the draft class of 1997, first round, 23rd pick by Seattle, Bobby Jackson, who was most famously known for playing for the Sacramento Kings. Man, thanks for coming on with us, Bobby.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys having me on the show today.
Yes, sir.
I definitely appreciate
you coming, man. And Bobby, hold on. You got drafted by Seattle. Just clear this up real quick. Did you get traded during the draft, Denver?
Yeah, I got traded 5 minutes after I got drafted to Denver. And the crazy thing about it, I never worked with those teams that drafted me.
Really?
So it was weird how both of those situations went down. Yeah, but I never.
Okay. So, let's go. Let's go catch up to about right now. Right now, you know, the season is suspended right now due to, you know, the coronavirus that's spreading all over the country. You guys were actually out on the court, you know, getting ready to play and everything, and you were supposed to, you know, they let a few games go for that night. You were supposed to play that night. At what point did you find out that, you know, it was going to be canceled due to, it was a referee, right?
I think the biggest thing when we realized it, our guys was ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could have had the game. I think the game would have been able to, I think we could have played the game, but New Orleans wasn't willing to come out, just based on all the information that they had got. So it was kind of, guys were kind of frustrated and upset because they really wanted to play. It was our first national television game. So, we definitely was ready to play. Not saying that.
Right.
I just don't know the specifics of the whole details. We just got it that New Orleans wasn't coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we was ready. We was coming out, warming up and everything. So that's when we heard that they didn't want to come out. We kind of figured at that time that the game was going to be canceled. And maybe the NBA had already canceled that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they left it up in the air to the teams on if we were going to play or not. But we only had two reps anyway. So there's a lot of moving segments that was going on that wasn't really broken down to all the fans and to the media.
Right.
There was a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, because, man, it happened so fast. I mean, we were actually talking about, you know, scheduling some podcasts and, you know, doing different things, and then all of a sudden you see, you know, the NBA suspended the season and, you know, everything just stopped. And it was like, man, it's like teams, you know, like you said, y'all getting ready to play. Some teams had already started playing and stuff on the East Coast. It's been crazy. And how have you been dealing with this? I don't know if you would call it a hiatus or a vacation.
Yeah, I've been calling it a coronacation.
Hey, man, they call it the Corona case. To be honest, man, I haven't really had since the season started, I haven't really had a lot of time to film my kids and, you know, do certain things with them. So now is just the time to make up for the time that I've been busy with my busy schedule during the season and catch up with daddy time and, you know, just being a father and catching up with my girls and, you know, allowing them just to be a part of my life and but me be a part of their life. So I think that's been the biggest thing that I've been really focused on since we got this little break is just spending a lot of time with my kids.
Mm-hmm. And I see the chef was out today, man. Look like what we having fried chicken tonight.
Hey man, I had to put the gloves on tonight. I haven't had to touch up because the kids is showing what these cooking skills was about. You know, I haven't told them to put the chicken on the grill and add some Brussels sprouts with it. Didn't want to have any high carbs because we ain't gonna be active for another month. I gotta kind of watch. I gotta watch the carbs now.
Yeah, you ain't trying to come back about big as Zion, man. You gotta be careful, man.
Man, nah, I get big easy. So, and Clay, it was good, man. I just wanted to, cook for my kids and show them that. Well, I have the cooking skills, and, they love it and enjoy it. And that's what it's about, man, just being a dad, but also, another shit is enjoying those special moments that you share with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely, man. I got to real quick take you back for a second, because Mark introduced you. He said he was a big fan of yours. Believe it or not, I was a big fan of yours as well, was a big deal because I'm a lifetime Laker fan. And
okay.
But Bobby,
I think he's kissing up to you.
I don't look to be a Laker fan.
No.
He kissing up to you right
now. No, these are facts, man. These are facts. Me and my pops, out of everybody on the team, me and my pops was like, Bobby, I don't know. It was something about you. You always did your thing. You always came through in the clutch for him. We had some battles with y'all, of course, over that time span. But I just always liked the way you hoop. You reminded me of my little nephew at the time. Y'all looked damn near the same, so we called him Bobby Jackson. I'm curious to know about y'all, that rivalry at that time. Of course, you got to play against Kobe. Any moments you can remember playing against him that just, just took you away?
Just start with some question. I think when you talk about you like me as a basketball player, but most Laker fans, bro, they say the same thing. They're like, man, I like you, but I couldn't stand your ass.
Yeah.
I loved your game, but I couldn't stand you. You used to kick our ass.
Man.
So most Laker fans say they like me, but they don't really like me, bro. And I get it, I kind of wore my game on my sleeve, bro. And I think that's the one thing.
Yeah.
I really took from Kobe Bryant is his competitive nature and how he approached it and how he didn't back down from anybody. And when he was in full Mamba mentality, bro, like he was unstoppable. And there was times in those series, man, it was like, whoo, this boy's a Ben Nimitz and Michael Jordan. And the kid was so special, and he was so electrifying. But to be able to be on the floor with him and be able to play against him and compete against him, it brought the best out of me every night. He kind of came up short. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that I remember about Kobe is his competitive fight. His will to win games, his ability to put that team on his shoulders and find any type of way to get a win. I remember in the playoffs, bro, it was my sole mission to guard you because I knew if I guarded you and we shut you down, I knew we would win this series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he told me after the series, and I'll never forget it. And there's other stories that I could talk about, but he was like, listen, our job was to not allow you to come in the game and wreck havoc.
And go on.
My job not to allow you to come in the game and go off. And so we talked about it after the end of the series, and, you know, we congratulated each other, and, you know, I asked him some questions, and then within those questions, that's when he got to that point and told me, like, you know, it was my job to shut you down.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to let that come between us winning a championship ring. Now, if I knew that at the time, I wish I would have took another different level and worked harder or got in the gym and finished and worked on my game a little bit harder because I knew they were game playing. I knew they were game playing for me anyway, right. But the respect for him to say that, you know, the respect is always going to be there because, you know, he didn't have to share that story with me. But it also allowed me to let me know a little kid coming from Salisbury, North Carolina, could play on a high level and compete against the best athletes in the world and still be a focal point on a team's defensive side of the game to try to take you out and implement a defensive scheme against me. So it was fun. It was always great wars, great battles. That's the Kobe Bryant story, bro.
I think that's, you said the word right in there that probably most Laker fans and probably the word I'm really looking for. You said respect. I think it was just a huge respect level. You know, of course, you guys for Kobe, but also, like you said, Laker fans for you. I think it was just a real respect level of what you could do and knowing when we played you, like, Bobby's going to bring it, bro. I expect Bobby to come off the bench and do what he do.
No, I agree. I kind of relished in that role. It kind of took me a minute to become a sixth man, but I kind of relished in it. And once Rick told me that this is what we need you to do, I was all aboard. And I was all for it. And when I got put in the game, I knew it was my job to provide energy, constant energy and effort every single minute I'm on the floor. Either when we're down or we're up, it was to be consistent and productive every single night. And I think that's what I tried to do every single night when I was on the floor.
Right. And, you know, like you said, like I was saying earlier, like this is when I became a fan of you, you know, the Sacramento days, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people were that way. But you made being a sixth man cool. I feel like at first, you know, it's been guys, you know, back in the day, I believe, like, Havlicek was a, you know, was mostly a sixth man coming up. But, like, the term kind of, like, started, you know, getting big, you know, in our generation, you know, early 2000s and stuff. And it was, like, the sixth man. And then, you know, now we got the, you know, we had the Jamal Crawfords, we had the Lou Williams, but at first it was Bobby Jackson, you know, for me. It was like, man, I remember creating players on the video game, and I didn't even want to start. I wanted to come off the bench and just, you know, do my thing. But you were a little different from Jamal and Lou. You like, not only did you come off the bench scoring, a lot of times you guarded, you know, the best player the best guard on the other team. Like, you was a defender as well, so you kind of did a little bit more. Was that something you knew coming off the bench that you had to do, or it was just, you know, like, something you did to win?
Well, let me say this. I didn't, like, as an NBA player, like, it took me some years to accept being a sixth man. Mm-hmm. I think any basketball player, any guy in the pro, he wants to be a starter.
Right.
And sometimes you got to be honest with yourself and ask yourself what's best for your career and what team or organization is the best fit for you. You know, I started my rookie season. I went to Minnesota and I backed up Terrell Brandon. I mean, Stephon Marbury and Terrell Brandon. And I learned a lot from those two guys, and those guys were all stars, rightfully so, in their own minds. And then I get here behind Jason Williams and Mike Bibby. And my sole purpose was to push and compete with those guys every single night.
Right.
And it was my job. And for me, I was a fierce competitor. I wanted to start. And I didn't see anything else. That's just how I was raised. That's how I competed. That's how I've been successful throughout my whole career. I love to compete. And sometimes when you compete at your highest and you think that you should start, like, at the end of the day, it was what was best for the team, me starting or me coming off the bench, especially behind Jason. And then Mike comes onto the scene, you know. I can tell you this, every single day, I made those guys work every single day. And I did not take it easy or lightly on their ass.
Yeah.
There'll be times in practice, Mike will be like, yo, you got to take it easy. Don't go too hard today, bro. Nah, bro. I'm going to bust your ass. And so my mindset was, I'm going to bust your ass in practice. And that's where I kind of relished into that role was I knew I could be a starter, but what was best for me was coming off the bench and being able to implement a style of play that we needed to be successful. Doing those long stretches and doing those long seasons in the playoffs and stuff. So it took me a time to accept it, but I think Rick Allen did a great job of allowing me to be me. He let me come in and change the energy and pick up full court, but also be aggressive offensively. And I say the one thing that keeps me separate from a lot of the guys that play the six man, like that won the six man, a lot of them didn't defend on both ends of the didn't play both sides of the ball. And nothing to them. It's not a disrespect to them. I felt like I played both sides of the ball. And I wanted to guard the best defender, or I wanted to guard the best offensive player every single night. And be able to score at a high level also, it kind of allowed me to be successful.
And what was it like when, like you said, you accepted that role, but what was it like when you got the, in 2003, when you won the Sixth Man of the Year award?
Repeat yourself, say that again?
I said, in 2003, what was it like? You know, do you remember the emotions going through your head and everything when you finally won the Sixth Man of the Year award?
You know what? I think that was a tough year for me. I think the biggest thing that I always think about when I won the Sixth Man of the Year award, that's the year that my mom passed away. So it was very a tough award to achieve and receive, because she had been an intricate part of me being successful and getting me and growing me into the young man that I had been. I had won something. I definitely wanted her to be there to share it with her and share it with me. I think that's the one thing that I remember about the Sixth Man. Regardless of all the accomplishments that I had that year, it was a tough year because my mom passed that same year. And she wasn't there to celebrate it with me. But I also know my teammates have played a huge part in me getting that award. The coaching staff did a great job of me getting that award. But I mean, the biggest thing is just not having my mom there by my side, watching me win something and be successful in the league that most people said I wasn't going to be successful in. I was going to be in and out of the league in 3 years. So to win that award, it was basic for her. And the hard work that she bestowed upon us, and then the hard work that she sacrificed to take care of me and my sister. So I think that was one thing that I remember the most. Is her not being there by my side when I received that award that night.
That's heavy. I want to move forward, if it's okay, to 2008, when you played for the Houston Rockets.
Hold on, real quick, Chris. Hold on, Chris.
Go ahead.
because I got to back it up from a little bit from 2008 before you guys got to Houston. You were still in Sacramento, and it was a play where you were guarding Tracy McGrady. And I believe it was like a foul call. It might have been away from the ball. And all of a sudden,
it was on the ball. It was on the ball. I know what you're getting at.
Well, what do you remember about that? Because I'm a huge T-Mac guy. And I remember watching the game, and the fight broke out, and they showed the replay, and it was just routine. You was guarding him, and I guess you fouled him and slapped at the ball when he shot it after the whistle. Was it chirping or anything before that kind of led up to him throwing the ball at you?
Nah, it wasn't no chirping at all. I was actually stunned that he threw the ball in my face. Because we hadn't had any words. For me, I was like a pet. I was super pesky. Like, I would do things to try to get you out of the game, to rub you the wrong way. But that was like, I just snapped at the ball to make you
that was nothing.
Shoot it. Yeah, like, I couldn't jump up there and block a shot because I was too damn little. So I was like, oh, nah, he ain't going to get this shot off. So I guess he didn't like it. And when he went to go shoot it, he turned around and hit me in my face with the ball. So I said, all right. He's like, what you going to do? All right. Yeah, I told him, what you going to do? Where I'm from and where I grew up, like, it ain't no what you going to do. It's going what I'm going to do. So, the street kid came out, and the kid from the project came out, and I wish I made a lot of money, because I would have passed over the toothpicks and dead in his face. but I knew if I did that, that was going to be like a $75,000, $100,000 fine.
Yeah,
so I was like, nah, man, I can't punch him in the face. I need this money, bro.
$100K hit different.
Man, tell me about it. I got hit for 25.
Ooh.
Just for a push.
Yeah.
So if I would have punched him in the face, that would have been 75 or 100. Maybe 150. So I was like, nah.
More than that, right? Because you got to. You would have had some games that you were suspended, so you would have missed some game checks, too.
Oh, yeah. I would have probably been suspended about three or four games for punching somebody. Yeah, you get suspended 3, 4, 6 games, and that would have been a lot of money. So that's what I was thinking about. I was like, man, I need this money. So I just shoved them, pushed them, and then started wrestling and rolling.
You couldn't just let a bit hit you in the face with the ball, man.
I'm never walking away from anybody that thinks they can hit me in my face. That's just how I was raised. Like, nah, you got to defeat me. I don't care if I get beat up. You got to defeat me, player.
Yeah, I was just like, that was just disrespectful.
That was very disrespectful. It's very disrespectful. But, you know, and to this day, we play together in Houston. We're really good friends. So we kind of laughed and chuckled about it when I went to Houston. And they kind of brought it up and was like, yo, how are you guys going to coexist with this fight? And that fight was like 5, 6 years later. Down
right.
the road, you know.
Right.
And so we were grown. We had kids. And, you know, it was like, man, we over this. You know, so it was cool playing with T-Mac in Houston and talking about it and relishing and we talking about the little fight that we had, the little scuffle. It wasn't a fight.
A little dust up, you know. That
Houston team,
that's what I want to talk about.
That's the
that,
year.
That squad, y'all had Rafe, y'all had T-Mac, Franchise,
So he got hurt.
Yeah.
The thing that happened was we went on this 22-game win streak. You know, y'all gets hurt, and then T-Mac get hurt in the playoffs, so we don't have neither one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We playing Utah in the first round of playoffs, and we was dubbed to probably go to, like, the Western Conference Finals, but we don't have neither one of our All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
right.
We got eliminated the first round, but, you know, when you lose two All-Stars, I mean, you don't have a chance to win.
Right.
At all. So, but that year, I think the hype with travel with y'all and being with T-Mac, I think it was probably one of the best because you got two humble dudes, especially y'all. The guy worked his ass. I've never seen somebody that big work so hard. Always the first guy to gym, always the last guy to leave. And when he went down, it was kind of tough because we knew he wasn't coming back because he had been having problems with his feet and his
right.
ankle. So we just knew he wasn't going to come back during that season. But with T-Mac also, you know, super athletic guy that, his skill set and skill level was tremendous, and he didn't have to work hard. The game came easy for him.
Right,
scoring came so easy for him; it was unbelievable. And I've never played against a guy where the scoring came so easy every single game. You know, and it kind of allowed him to grow and be the face of the franchise when y'all went down. And,
mm-hmm.
You see him being an all-star for a perennial all-star for so many years. But I think that team, we kind of relished in the fact that we love playing together. And once we stepped on the floor, Rick Allen also did a great job of putting guys in great situations and allowing them to be successful once they stepped on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And, like, also on that, and Steve Francis, he was on that thing, but he was hurt the whole year, right?
Yeah. He was hurt. He was out. He actually got traded.
He got traded there?
Tim Hall. He got sent away somewhere.
Oh, God.
So he was never around the facility, as I can recall. So I think he got sent away to New York, I think. I think he got traded for Rafer. Right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's
right.
Rafer went to Fresno State, and that's where we from, Fresno. Everybody was always pulling for Rafer.
Yeah. He's a good guy, man. Me and him was with the N1 shoe. We had an N1 shoe, and we were doing the skip to my loo, and
yep.
Dick and Tony. Yep. We can pound the shit out the ball, bro.
And Bobby, you know, a lot of people, you know, like when you come up in, you know, AAU and just high school, everybody, you know, work out as a team and stuff, and, you know, get better as a team. And with this Houston team, you had a guy on the team. He was from the Valley, California as well, Chuck Hayes.
Uh-huh.
And have y'all, you know, everybody laughed at how he should shoot free throws. Was it ever a time where it was like, I'm going to get with you and, you know, try to – let me help you out, bro.
Well, nobody really got – with him about shooting free throw, we just know he was a lousy free throw shooter. With all the pausing and hitting and switching, you know, he's like hydroplaning at the free throw line. You know, hitting his got that hitching and get up.
Man,
Chuck was super cool, man. And you know, there's a lot of bigs that couldn't shoot the ball and shoot from the free throw line, and he was one of them. Barkley was, Shaq was one. Dwight Howell was one. Problem is, he was just 6'5". But phenomenal basketball player, great teammate.
Yeah.
Got it, laid it on the line every single night, and he did all the dirty work. He did all the work that nobody wanted to do. So much respect to him, because he was a really, really good teammate, but also a really, really good basketball player.
Yeah, definitely. He was a big part of that team. And
big part of that team.
Setting screens, and he was a brick wall.
Yep. Chuck Hayes, man. And really, really good basketball player, man.
Matter of fact, Chuck married somebody from Fresno, too.
Yeah. You know, the girl from Fresno. A lot of Fresno ties.
I'm curious here. You played in the David Stern era. You have to say as far as his effect? Because I hear a lot of the players have respect for him, and you know what he did for the game at that time. What was your perspective of David Stern?
Man, he did a tremendous job of evolving the game. Transcending the game from the United States to overseas, to Europe, to Africa, China, you know. But then he did a phenomenal job of creating a salary cap and raising the money, but also coming up with a system that allowed guys to really, really make money and be taken care of. And I think he was more for the players than he was for the owners. And I think the players do is respect him from that, for going to war for us and taking this league to another level and allowing guys to stand on a platform that showcased their skills and their talents, and they was rewarded for their skills and talents with his hard work and the salary caps, the insurance, the 401k, the players, the NBA pensions. So you talk about things that people don't really know about. Like, he transcended it and allowed guys, once they got done playing, is to be able to elevate, but also still be taken care of once they hit a certain age. And it was a tremendous job that he's done. And trust me, he missed every single day, because he has revolutionized this game and revolutionized this league to a plateau and a place that it may not have been here if he wasn't the head of the regime.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah. Facts. That's epic. That's cool, man. I think a lot of people that wasn't, in the circle of the NBA and things like that, he kind of had like a bad, everybody talked about the Lakers veto and things like that, but I just noticed all the respect level that everybody that played in that era had for him, so I just had to ask.
Yeah, I think you don't care about that Lakers veto. I was fine with it. I didn't have no problem with it. But you only cared about that, bro. But so then, you go on from Houston, you go to
I go back to Sac, and that was my last 2 years of playing. After Houston, I went back to Sac, and so kind of went back home and kind of retired, and that was it. I was happy to go back and retire Sacramento King, a place where I relished and had the best years of my career, and it was the place that I call home. So it was phenomenal that they traded me back there.
Right. And going into the beginning of that year, did you know that that would be your last, or?
No, I actually didn't. I actually had aspirations to play a couple more years, but I had broke my hand 2 times that summer, working out, playing ball, lifting, getting in shape. Mm-hmm. And so I broke my hand twice within a month and a half. It was the same hand. So getting ready for training camp, I couldn't get ready for training camp. And I just woke up one morning. I was like, time for me to retire. And I think God's trying to tell me, you know, trying to give up basketball and go into a different direction in your life and figure out what's the next phase and what's the next adventure that you're going to elevate at and be successful with. And so I decided, woke up that morning, decided to retire, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. And now you're currently on the Sacramento Kings coaching staff, so you still bleeding that Sacramento blood. And
without a doubt.
How did that do you remember who approached you about, you know, joining the coaching staff?
Came out when I retired?
Yeah, when you retired.
When I retired, Jeff Petrie. He was a GM. He was like, man, you'd be a wonderful coach. I can see how you talk and how you lead and how guys will pay attention to you and listen to you. So I always wanted to stay attached to the game, learn the game, and figure it out. And so Jeff Petrie was the one guy that said, you know what, once you get done, you can come back and you can play. You know, I kind of knew 4 or 5 years before I retired that I wanted to go into coaching. I wanted to do it. So I kind of started making those plans and headway that allowed me to join and go into coaching right out once I retired.
This was up. And then a few years later, Vivek took over the team. And the team is, you know, they, you know, in the rebuilding process. Well, actually, it's y'all close to being a playoff contender. Y'all in the eighth seed. Well, not the eighth seed. Y'all in contention for the eighth seed this year.
Yeah.
So you're in the ninth spot. What has changed since Vivek has, you know, took over the Sacramento Kings?
What has changed since Vivek has taken over? I think the biggest thing that has changed, he has allowed the ex-players to come back and be a part of this great franchise and to try to and to see if we can turn it around, which is led by Vlade Divac and Pedro Stojakovic. But giving ex-players the opportunity to come work for the franchise, him giving back to the community, the city of Sacramento, buying the team and taking it into a new direction. I think what he stands for and what he's trying to create is a legacy that, you know what, that says, you know what, I don't see color, I don't see race, I see hard work. And within that hard work, if you're willing to do it, you can be a part of this organization. So I think he's done a tremendous job with giving back and reviving this city, but also bringing in the right people to take this thing to the next level. And hopefully we can get back to the playoffs if it's not this year, but hopefully next year.
Right.
I agree. I've always loved you know, to be able to have the past players around and bridge the gap of what the franchise is about and things like that, I feel like is big in the locker room. Let's say that real quick. But also, just wondering, how do you feel? I mean, of course, you're on his staff, but how do you feel as far as Luke? And you know, just originally everybody was saying he's a bad coach. I know you seen the sound bite when he didn't put Buddy in for the end of that game. Recently, what was it? It was down 3 and the fan was saying Lou things like that. What is your, position there as far as what you see from him in defense or whatever the case may be?
I'm always ride with Luke. You know, so number one, he's given me an opportunity to be on his coaching staff. But number two, he does know what it takes to be a coach. And he's learning every single day. And I think the one thing that has kept him relevant in this league is he understands the outcome of he understands the outcome of being successful, but he also, because he's an ex-player, and
right.
I think the one thing that allowed him to come in and do such a great job is he's created a great lines of communication, and his coaching style is A1 among the players, and we started off slow, and now we're starting to gain some headroom, and guys are starting to get his philosophy down and understand what it takes to be successful in this league. And sometimes that takes time. The fans may not like it. The CD may not like it, but being a coach is hard. And I can tell you this, he's doing a phenomenal job with rallying us and rallying the truth, coming in with a great game plan and understanding that what it takes to play at a high level. People just got to be patient. And the crazy thing about it is they just don't know the work that he puts in, I put in, all the other coaches put in to help these guys step on the floor every single night to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. And one of the guys I wanted to talk to you about is your star point guard, De'Aaron Fox. How high do you think De'Aaron ceiling is as a player? Because he, you know, got freakish, you know, athletic skills, fast as a fox. You know, how good can De'Aaron be?
Honestly, man, I think he has the potential to be like his ceiling is unbelievable, and I'm not saying that because I see the kid every single day. I'm around him. I've been a part. I've seen him for 3 years. You know, with his speed and athleticism, it's tops in the league. It's top five in the league as far as guard. And I think the one thing he's constantly getting better every single day and every single year. And sometimes I think he's a little too unselfish.
Yeah.
I think he needs to be a little bit more selfish in the aspect of, you know, he's gotten better every year.
Right.
His scoring has grown up each and every year. You know, he was about 17 last year. He's at 20 this year. But this league is a guard-dominated league.
Yeah.
And there's one guy on our team that has the ability to dominate and be a 25-point scorer every single night.
Mm-hmm.
So I want me purposely, I want him to be a little bit more selfish in the fact of just coming down and being more aggressive offensively and being more of a leader also. And talking and leading and putting guys in their places. Because this is, at the end of the day, like I tell them this all the time. We go how you go.
Mm-hmm.
If you play like shit, this team gonna play like shit.
Yeah.
And I know that's the pressure. Some people don't like to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the fact. If you're not at a high level, then this team can't be at a high level. I was born and I was bred that way. The team goes how the point guard goes. And you got to be a consistent, productive, competitive PG every single night. So I think the sky's the limit for him, and I think he's going to be a tremendous basketball player throughout his career.
Mm-hmm. All right. And yeah, we're gonna wrap this up. Chris, you got anything else for Bobby M, man?
Yeah, I just was curious, long term, who do you think, you know, because they came in as kind of a head-to-head deal. So who do you think long-term, Lonzo Ball?
You're not talking about Lonzo. You say long-term. And listen, I'm not a hater about
short or long. Go ahead and give it to me.
I think Lonzo is playing phenomenal basketball right now before the season has got came to a halt.
Definitely.
And when we went through the draft process, I watched them compete against each other tremendously. And it was just that competitive edge that I thought De'Aaron had over Lonzo every single time they played against each other. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even close. Like I said, I think Lonzo is a tremendous basketball player. But for me, I'm going to say De'Aaron. Not even him being on our team in Washington College when they played Kentucky and UCLA, I'm just like, whoa, it's not even close.
You got to forgive him, Bobby. Remember, he's a Lakers fan.
Yeah, it wasn't even close.
Hey, whoa. I watched him. I definitely watched him. Listen, it ain't a Lakers thing. Go ahead.
Lonzo gone.
I'm good with it.
Can you let the guest talk?
I saw De'Aaron got buckets.
Just making sure, man.
Oh, man.
Just making sure.
And then, Bobby, man, my last question for you, man, is one we frequently ask everybody. Who's on your Mount Rushmore? Hold on. Matter of fact, no. Let's make this a little better. You're Sixth Man of the Year, award winner. Made the Sixth Man cool for the new era of kids. Let's do it. The Mount Rushmore of Sixth Man.
Okay. Ooh. Ain't got to be no order, does it?
No order.
All right. I'm going to probably say me, of course.
All right.
Lou Will.
Mm-hmm.
Jamal Crawford.
Jay Cross.
I think Kevin McHale.
I said Havlicek earlier. It was McHale that was the sixth man.
I would say Kevin McHale because he's a Minnesota guy, and I'm a Minnesota guy. And then I'm going to probably say...
That's four. That's
Mount
Rushmore.
That's four. Oh, that's four, huh? Oh, it's only four. Okay. I was trying to stick out five, but hey, we're good with those four right there.
Right with it.
Well, man, we appreciate you, man. I've been hunting you down and bugging you all week on your, what you call it, coronacation?
Coronacation.
And man, if you want to shout out your Instagram, Twitter handle, stuff like that, I know you got the Bobby Jackson Academy, is it correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got the BJBA. I just opened up, but I just shut it down because of the coronacation. So I'm going to be down for a couple weeks. The Bobby Jackson Basketball Academy. Bobby Jackson 73 IG account, Bobby Jackson Foundation, which helps at risk youth give back to the community through different organizations, just helping out our city of Sacramento. And I think that's pretty much it, man. It's just just trying to be positive and making a change in the city that I call home.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And for people that don't know, now they know, don't throw a basketball at you. It's going to be problems.
Nah. Yeah, don't throw nothing at me. It's going to be a problem. Don't throw anything at me.
Always talk.
All right, y'all, man.
All right, man. All right, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Man, yes, thank sir. You. Yes, thank sir. You for your time, Bobby.
And this is another episode of the Minute Till Six. I'm your host, Mark Haynes, MH Champ, along with my co-host,
Chris Perry, chris.perrysr, man. You know what it is.
And this is Minute Till Six, and we out.
Peace.